Good morning.
Good morning, Ryerson.
Yeah, how are you doing this morning, Emma?
I'm doing pretty well, actually. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing pretty well. A little tired, but, you know, things are good. It's getting pretty chilly out there these mornings, eh?
It definitely is. I can start to see my breath.
Yeah.
Soon it's going to be to the point where your snot's going to freeze as soon as you breathe in the air.
Yeah, I hope not. But, yeah, we're going to start you off with a song here by a band called T-Rex. Songs from 72 off their album The Slider. So I hope you're having a good morning, and we'll be with you shortly. Welcome back. You're listening to Headlines and Deadlines on CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto. We're going to do some Ryerson news here for you. Emma, what's coming up this morning in news for the eye-opener?
Well, we've got kind of a jolly story to start you off this morning. There's a student in Pittman Hall that has been arrested for sexual assault. The incident was reported by the female victim on October 2nd and was dealt with. Right afterwards, the reported the attacker and Yeah, sexual assault. The police are still investigating the situation. Res staff say that they're trained to aid students and counsel them in case of these kinds of incidents. And they say that they're pretty rare. Mm-hmm. So this is the first case in quite a while, I think, of something like this happening.
You were on res last year, right?
I was.
Were there any incidents you know of last year? Was this something you heard of in the past? Or
This in particular, there were no like sexual assault cases. I know there was one situation of a girl on my floor who left her door unlocked overnight and found this guy standing in her room at 2 or 3 in the morning. Yeah. And I don't remember what happened with that story, whether or not he was drunk or, you know, was looking, had other intentions.
Yeah,
but
hopefully he was just drunk and confused.
Definitely stumbled into the wrong room. Yeah. I think it's always a contentious issue. Res security, you know, is it too anal? Is it stringent enough? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, even though you have to sign in a guest every time you come into residence and show your ID, it's really possible to get in easily. For instance, if you go in with a group of people, if it's a party, you could just sneak in or leave your guest. So there's always questions about how people get into the building and what they do once they're there.
Yeah, definitely. I remember checking in a few times last year. And, I thought things were pretty strict or stringent in terms of signing in, showing your ID. But I guess it's difficult just because a lot of the younger students and probably students, probably their first time experiences with alcohol and things like that. So, I don't know. I guess it's always good to be safe.
Yeah, definitely.
Another ongoing story, it's Ryerson related, but it's also provincial related. The story started with a Freedom of Information request by the provincial NDP on lobbying dollars by colleges and university. And the document that was released revealed that I think it's up to 9 universities had collectively spent nearly $1 million on hiring lobbyists to deal with the government. So basically they were spending taxpayers' dollars to lobby the government for more taxpayers' dollars. So
wow.
It's an interesting scenario. In the eye-opener story, they interviewed Ryerson's president, Sheldon Levy, who said that Ryerson itself had spent just under $100,000 last year on lobbyists and would continue to do so as long as legal. So, I mean, that's a fair amount of cash.
For sure.
I wonder what the returns on those on that is, though.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you think? How much of a difference does it make?
Yeah, that's what I'm curious to find out. He said that whatever the law is, the university would obviously follow it. But until a new bill is passed, Ryerson will continue to lobby for more money. So it's an interesting scenario, and we'll see how it unfolds.
Yeah. It's interesting. Parts of Ryerson campus are always looking for more money, and if we're spending $100,000 to lobby for more, I wonder if it's actually making a difference or where the money's going. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the issue. Neither in any of the articles on CBC or The Star really reported or said, you know, what any of the universities or colleges had received in return, if they'd seen any benefits. And the eye-opener article doesn't as well, but that's an interesting aspect. Because, I mean, if, you know, Ryerson is benefiting in a way, I mean, maybe it's a good thing. But who knows? I guess that's the issue. So,
definitely. Another story on Ryerson campus this week. Ryerson has passed a new freedom of speech statement that forbids the university from actually shutting down events that are controversial. I know that last year at Carleton University, there were 5 students who held a pro-life demonstration on their campus, and they were shut down. Mm. So this new bill, Heather Lane Viter, the vice provost of students, was interviewed in the story. And she was saying that they're trying to catch up with other universities because U of T already has a freedom of speech statement. So, you know, trying to seem more progressive, I guess, and, you know, have this kind of thing set up. So if an event is controversial, it's you know, Ryerson's not able to shut it down. I know that at UVic, where I used to go, there was a big issue with the pro-life group on campus and whether or not to grant them funding or whether or not to grant them space to meet. And then the students' union's values came into conflict with those of that pro-life group. So that's an issue that pretty much got beaten for a few years.
How did that issue turn out on the UVic front?
They eventually decided to give the group funding after the BC Civil Liberties Association intervened, and there was a lot of protest from outside groups, and they eventually granted them club status and funding.
Yeah. So. It'd be interesting to see if any new groups form or any new protests take shape on the campus.
Definitely. Well, there was an article in the Eye Opener, more of an opinion article, a few weeks ago about whether or not the student union's values sort of, you know, exclude students or, you know, create conflict on Ryerson campus, and whether or not that influences their decision to, you know, let groups become a reality.
It's tricky. I mean, not to keep going back to UVic, but I remember...
Hey, it's a good place.
Yeah, it's a good place. but I remember with there was an issue about a job fair they're having, and the military is recruiting, and I remember the students' union there, I believe the students' union, banned the military booth at the job fair from recruiting, and just purely out of their own principles and their own values. And they eventually overturned it and allowed them back. But, it was interesting. It was just kind of like another, not repression, but suppression of free speech or in a way. So, yeah, there's always those issues are always contentious and always interesting. On a lighter note, there's an article online by a guest blogger, for the Eye Opener, and it's about Red Bull and energy drinks and all those caffeinated uppers, I guess you could say, that students take. It's, I guess, midterm season right now. Do you have any midterms right now?
I have a few coming up next week. I've got a geography one and a history one as well. What about you?
I had one yesterday. It's a bit difficult studying over the Thanksgiving weekend, but it went well. But the article talks about the risks related to these energy drinks. there's a piece in it about a student who just recently suffered a seizure after drinking two cans of Red Bull on an empty stomach. So it was probably just a isolated case, but it's always pretty scary. And also, I talked about alternatives, like green tea, for example. It was a healthy alternative. Ginseng.
Black coffee as well as apparently pretty good.
Yeah, the black coffee, no sugar. She said the sugar is like almost the worst thing, just because you crash so much harder. So there's definitely a lot of alternatives. Do you ever take any of these helpers to help you stay awake?
No, well, I find they taste pretty terrible. Yeah. So my general principle is if it tastes bad, I don't drink it.
That's pretty good.
I love coffee. I love black coffee.
Yeah.
Got this good relationship with it, so that's pretty much all I need. What about you? Do you ever take energy drinks?
No, not to study. If I get tired and fall asleep, then, you know, I probably should be getting that sleep anyways.
That's legit, yeah.
There's no point in, you know, staying up that extra hour and a half, you know, and really trying to cram things in.
Yeah. Are you really going to absorb anything if all you're thinking about is being in bed?
Yeah. I know. That's a problem. Well, I know some people, a friend of mine posted on my Facebook wall at like 5 in the morning the other day. I was like, what are you doing staying up? It's like, you know, studying. I was like, really? Like, how much are you really taking in?
Are you more of a get things done beforehand and study, or are you more of a crammer?
More of a crammer, but I am getting better, I guess I'd say. I know, I've actually been, like, impressed with my planning ahead skills and studying. But there's definitely still work to be done. What about you?
I kind of a mixed thing as well. Yeah. Usually find setting up my notes and going through them, reading everything beforehand. Yeah. But there's a certain value to cramming.
Yeah.
20 minutes before your test, especially on so many tests and exams where it's just about, like, you know, spewing back what you've been learning. So all you do is sort of retain it, and then you can spew it back out again for the test. But I definitely find that planning beforehand and, you know, getting your stuff together is really vital.
Yeah, no. I mean, and as they say, like, in terms of from certain studies, that, you know, cramming usually is not that helpful, that you're often better off getting your sleep.
Definitely. If you have any strategies for studying for midterms, any really ingenious ways of staying awake, you can feel free to give us a call at 416-595-1655. And once again, if you have any song requests or any comments about the stories that we've talked about today, feel free to call in. We'd love to talk to you.
And yeah, we're going to go to a song break here by a Vancouver band who's featured heavily on our show, on my part, Black Mountain, off their album In the Future. Album's from a few years ago, and yeah, the song's called Stay Free.
Oh,
Welcome back.
Yeah, so now on to a current, ongoing, and live story. Emma, what are the details on this Chilean mine rescue?
Well, late last night, Toronto time anyways, the first of the 33 miners that have been trapped in the San Jose mine in Chile was brought to the surface. And it was a streaming video last night, sort of live coverage of the miners being pulled out. And I believe the process is still ongoing. They, a CBC reported they pulled out a second miner as well. Mm-hmm. The first guy was married with two children. I think he was pretty happy to, you know, come out and see his family. So the technology worked in their favor this time around.
Yeah, no, I couldn't imagine. On the CBC right now, they're reporting that the eighth miner has reached the
surface. That's awesome.
So that's good to hear. And they have a good picture slideshow to go along with it. But to watch this event live, if you have like access to many cable channels, you can watch it on CBS. But if you go to newsblog.com, there's a link on their website to watch the rescue of the miners live. So definitely check that out. But yeah, that trip from the mine down below to the surface is something like they expected it to take 20 minutes, but I think it's taking around like 15 or 16 minutes.
That's awesome.
No,
the amount of time that they invested in this technology and making sure it was foolproof is...
Yeah, that's amazing. And the capsules, like, named Phoenix 1 is something that's like shoulder width wide, like maximum.
It's pretty tiny. Like, you see people get inside and they're like, their shoulders are all crunched up.
Yeah.
So.
And apparently NASA donated a liquid diet to the miners to send down to them to prevent nausea and other effects of, you know, the rapid ascent. And I guess there's a bunch of different factors because down in the mine it's something around 30 degrees Celsius, but up on the surface there it's like near freezing. And also, I mean, they haven't been exposed to any light or anything.
No.
So they're wearing sunglasses. So yeah, there's all sorts of issues there in terms of, you know, readapting. And that's aside from psychological issues that I'm sure like they'll have to deal with in the coming days.
Yeah.
But so far, a success. So definitely keep your eyes open for that.
I hope they have a follow-up story in the next few months on how the miners are coping with their their new lives.
Yeah. On to Toronto news now. In the ongoing saga of the mayoral campaign and controversial candidate Rob Ford, election signs were put up overnight, not this night, sorry, on Monday night, that didn't name Rob Ford specifically, but they were pretty offensive. They were anonymous, and someone came by and took them down by the morning, but they mentioned a racist, drunk wife beater for mayor, I believe, was the actual signage.
It's a classy way to do it.
Yeah, so here it is. Wife beating racist drunk for mayor. So, well, didn't name Rob Ford specifically, with his past or with his history well known. It was obviously targeted at him. Rob Ford said that he didn't expect it was any opposition candidates, but he didn't mention there's obviously something with funding, because, I mean, someone has to print those signs and pay for all that and put them up. So it'd be, you know, interesting to find out who's behind that.
Definitely. I think most of the opposition candidates condemned the signs.
Yeah.
Did they not?
Yeah. All of them came out strongly against the signs. So, you know, maybe one of them's running a secret slander campaign, but I'm sure there isn't. Yes, there's another story here on Rob Ford, who's unfortunately in the news too often.
I read a comment in iWeekly a few weeks ago that whatever candidates in the media are the candidates considered by the public to be in the race.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of what kind of press Rob Ford is getting, I guess any press is positive press.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, this article that just came out... is owner of a pub located on the beachfront in Toronto, says he has plans to sue Rob Ford over comments the politician made earlier this year. So it's a six, he plans to serve Rob Ford with a $6 million libel suit after... Ford suggested that the pub owner bribed the city to open up his restaurant. So, you know, maybe it's a temporary thing during the election campaign. Someone doesn't really want to see Rob Ford elected. But I don't know. The candidates seem to be pulling out their stops. I mean, election date is the October 25th, and just the other day, George Smitherman came out with a new campaign. So. I know people. The other candidates are definitely feeling the heat.
Definitely. What's your opinion on all the negative press that Rob Ford's getting?
I think most people can, you know, see through it and really focus on the issues. Because I think in terms of those offensive signs, they refer to multiple things that, you know, are mostly partially true. And some of them not true. And those things, you know, his mistakes he has admitted to the past, like drunk driving in Florida. He's opened up about that and talked about that. So, actual candidate issues aside, I don't know. I think people could make a good decision based on the length of the coverage of this election. I mean, people have had a good opportunity to see all the candidates. So, yeah, no, I think people can make good judgments on character from what they've seen. I don't know, how have you felt about the recent, I guess, recent slew of negative campaigns?
I think that when looking for things to cover, it's often easier to focus on negative events as well, as opposed to necessarily what the candidates and maybe doing positively, and I'm not singling out Rob Ford mm-hmm. in this comment and all the candidates in general. But this entire election seems to be kind of a competition to find out more about the candidates, find out something negative in their past, and sort of use that against them. I know that Rob Ford's, I think it was Rob Ford's brother came out to... acknowledged that he was going to be running an award and would be supporting George Smitherman.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, they're looking for old family yeah. connections. And George Smitherman invited the media into his home a few months ago. So it seems to be trying to find more and more about these candidates that's not necessarily related to their platforms yeah. or what they tend to stand for. So I find some of the coverage kind of maybe... It's interesting and important for the public to know about, mm-hmm. but I hope that people focus on the issues.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Another election news, six members of Rocco Rossi's campaign have shifted over to the George Smitherman camp. So, I don't know, it's getting pretty hectic here in, you know, the final weeks. So, I haven't seen any recent polls, or no recent polls have come out. You know, it's gonna be a really interesting election night.
I guess we're gonna have to abandon the polls then and go on our own constitution of
yeah.
who we want to vote for.
Yeah, you know, maybe we'll have like a coalition mayor, but I mean, not actually. But you never know.
But, oh, coalition governments.
Yeah. In other Toronto news, debates can be held in November at Toronto's Roy Thompson Hall, part of the Monk debate series. Between former British Prime Minister Tony Blair and the passionate and famous atheist Christopher Hitchens in discussion on the role of religion. So it's a pretty high-profile debate. They'll be arguing about the understanding of faith and whether it's necessary in a world of globalizing and rapid social change. So... It should be pretty interesting. Blair is a Roman Catholic convert himself. So debates on November 26th. It's open to the public, which is great, and be streamed online. So definitely accessible. Definitely check that out if you have the opportunity.
What's your opinion on that, Mike? Does religion have a place in our current society?
Yeah. It's a tricky one. I believe it does. I would caution against, you know, both, whether it's people of a religion or atheists or whoever it is, about, you know, forcing or forcing or, you know, kind of pushing their opinions on other people. I think definitely religion, there's you know, good to be done with it. Obviously, it's received a lot of bad press. But, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of people out there who are religious who, you know, are, you know, do some great things. And likewise with, you know, whether it's atheism or agnosticism, you know, people like to look at it as, you know, as those people are possibly lost or, you know, without direction. But I think, you know, there's good to be taken there from that as well. So I'm kind of riding the fence here. But what's your opinion on the issue?
I find that religion often gets a lot of bad press, and that a lot of that's pretty legitimate by, you know, people of faith don't necessarily have a very good history, and there's a lot of awful things that are still being done in the name of religion, and the way that religion is tied up with power and money. I definitely think that there's definitely a place for it, and that it can, you know, do a lot of good for sure, and motivates people to good in so many ways. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think it's important, as long as it's, you know, can be separated from, you know, greed and corruption. So
I think one of the things I definitely am adamant about is separation of church and state.
Yes.
I mean, it's a must, and it's an issue down in the United States. It's definitely coming to the forefront of the midterm elections. So it's interesting to watch parties like the Tea Party or extreme right-wing Republicans and their rhetoric about, you know, a godlike nation and, you know, we should be passing laws based on, you know, God's principles and things like that. So I'm just glad to hear in Canada that there is a strong separation, and I hope that can continue.
I agree. It's funny. There's some small communities that still, God's very involved. Mm-hmm. I know my friend Anna had an experience this summer, went with her mom to a football game in down in New England, and at the beginning of the football game, they had an altar call, and
really?
Her mom wrote in to complain about this. Her mom's a United Methodist minister, and got a huge amount of flack from the community for even questioning it. So it's interesting how religion is so intensely tied.
Yeah, no, it's a... I mean, it's not even remotely controversial here compared to down the States. So, yeah, that'd be pretty interesting.
Definitely. We're going to cue up a song for you. This is a song I've had stuck in my head for the past few weeks. This is Old Crow Medicine Show with Wagon Wheel.
South to the land of the pines, I'm thumbing my way to North Carolina, staring up the road and pray to God I see headlights. I made it down the coast in 17 hours, picking me a bouquet of dogwood flowers, and I'm hoping for Riley, I can see my baby tonight. So rock me, mama, like a wagon wheel, rock me, mama, any way you feel. Hey, mama, rock me. Rock me, mama, like the wind and the rain. Rock me, mama, like a southbound train. Hey, mama, rock me. together in an old time string band. My baby plays a guitar, a big banjo now. Oh, North Country winters keep forgetting me, and I lost my money playing poker, so I had to wipe and lay. But I ain't a turning back. The little lad don't laugh no more. So rock me, mama, like a wagon wheel. Rock me, mama, any way you feel. Hey, mama, rock me. Rock me, mama, like the wind and the rain. Rock me, mama, like a southbound train. Hey, mama, rock me. South out of Roanoke, I caught a trucker out of Philly, had a nice long toke. But he's headed west from the Cumberland Gap to Johnson City, Tennessee. And I gotta get a move on before the sun. I hear my baby calling my name, and I know that she's the only one. And if I die in Raleigh, at least I will die free. So wreck me, mama, like a wagon wheel. Wreck mama, any way you feel. Hey, mama, rock me. Rock me, mama, like the wind and the rain. Rock me, mama, like a southbound train. Hey.
All right, welcome back. That was Old Crow Medicine Show on Wagon Wheel. You're saying you were listening to that song throughout the summer?
I was. It was kind of a soundtrack for my summer. Mm-hmm. And definitely a really solid song to get mm-hmm. the guitar and drums and just have a jam session yeah. with. So that was great.
Do you know what album that's off?
Old Crow Medicine Show, actually. Oh, it's abbreviated as OCMS.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Is that like pretty recent, like released within the last year, or is it like an older one?
It's an older one, for sure. Yeah. It's a pretty standard album and song, I think. It's been around for a while.
Yeah. No, I haven't heard it before, and it's great. But there's a story you've been looking into.
That's right. There's a story that came out in the Ryersonian this week. The issue of online profiles has been important for the past few years, but Campus Recruitment and Benchmark, the organization, just came out with a survey this year. They surveyed 654 Canadian employers on how much they look at online profiles when they're job searching, looking for employees, and how much they do traditional, hiring for interviews, mm-hmm. Asking people questions in a, sort of traditional way. And it turned out that 34% turned to social networks.
Yeah.
For employees this year, up from 23%. So that's a 12% increase than last year. That's huge.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And the report also says that the average cost for recruiters has decreased overall 50% from the previous year. So, I mean, they're obviously, you said, allocating time and a lot less money to social networking recruiting, where traditionally they would show up on a campus and have a recruitment fair, kind of scouting people online.
Definitely. So it's exciting for some people. Means, you don't necessarily have to go in for you're not being scouted out in a more traditional way. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it means there's more need for information to be monitored. What you put online is becoming more important.
Because even with more stringent, Facebook privacy policy, there's still ways for companies or individuals to get a hold of your information. I mean, like, you don't, I'm sure that companies hire or have investigated in ways of, digging into potential clients' profiles. I know the article lists a number of lawsuits that have been filed on behalf of individuals against companies for breach of privacy. So, yeah, your online footprint, that's the issue. In terms of your Facebook profile, are you cautious about what you put on there, or, you know, have you, like, adjusted your Facebook privacy settings?
The information that I try to put on there, it's, even though Facebook is exclusive to people that you friended, I know about Facebook's privacy policies and it's sharing of third-party information or sharing of information to third parties. And I try to put stuff on there that I wouldn't care if everybody else saw.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that pictures of you drinking apparently will influence employers.
Yeah.
So that's something that is a bit of a tough one. You sort of have to mm-hmm. reevaluate whether if someone tags this picture of you, whether or not you'd want everybody in the world to see it.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of the reality now. So, yeah, I usually try to be fairly cautious about what I say on there.
Yeah.
So what about you, Mike?
Well, I know when Facebook first came out, I definitely was, you know, didn't think about it at all. And, you know, the comments I posted and stuff I wrote, you know, was, like, pretty ridiculous and, like, you know, kind of outrageous. But not that, you know, I'm constantly monitoring myself nowadays, but definitely, like, I mean, I'm matured and older, so, you know, things have toned down, but there are...
We should hope.
Yeah.
I'm just bugging you.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's definitely still a few photos and things on there that I need to detag myself. But in terms of my personal information, I don't really have anything on there, just because, I don't know, I don't even know why. I mean, if people are my friends, they'll have my phone number, so there's tons of people, like, I have on my Facebook friend list who, you know, I probably haven't talked to in years or, you know, ever talked to, so those people don't need any of my personal information. And then I've also adjusted my privacy settings as well to, you know, the maximum level that you can go, so... No, it's definitely interesting.
It definitely is.
Have
you ever self-Googled, or do you self-Google?
I've never self-Googled, but, you know, maybe I'll do that today. Maybe that's something I'll do.
That's another issue as well. In Ryerson's new media program, students are taught how to have their results show up higher
mm-hmm.
On Google search results than others. And I'm not sure how you do that.
Yeah.
I know there was a seminar, a journalism seminar at Wordstock a few weeks ago where one of the workshop presenters talked about how you can do that, how to make your ads and your results show up on the first page for employers. So it's I think quite a few people use that now as a method of searching out people's, you know, online activity.
I mean, if you have your own personal website to promote your work or a profile, I'm not talking social media profile, profile of your work, it's definitely a good way to highlight yourself for anybody looking out for you. So it's interesting. Have you ever Googled yourself?
I have, yes. Something else that I find useful is LinkedIn. That's another resource that's discussed in the Ryersonian article. LinkedIn is a website that sort of aggregates all, like, results of you on the internet. And so some of them show up not to be me, but, you know, our articles you've written, you know, when you've showed them in newsletters or on people's websites.
Yeah.
And collects that all in one place for, you know, I guess potential employers or other people looking for you to see. So it's interesting. Sometimes it puts weird information together. I looked on one. I don't know how it figured out that I'm from Victoria, BC, that I'm 20 years old, and this is my name. So that creeped me out a little bit.
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
So, yeah, it's definitely a good resource for sure, and employers use it. So.
Yeah. But, yeah, we're going to go to a song break here. The song is off a classic Bruce Springsteen album, Born to Run. The song's I'm on Fire. You're listening to Headlines and Deadlines on CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto.
Hey, little girl, is your daddy home? Did he go and leave you all alone? I got a bad desire. Oh, I'm on fire. Tell me now, baby, is it good to you? And can he do to you the things that I do? Oh, no, I can take you high. Like someone took a knife, baby, edgy and dull, and cut a 6-inch valley through the middle of my skull. At night I wake up with the sheets soaking wet and a freight train running through the middle of my head. Only you can cool my desire. Ooh, I'm on fire.
I'm on fire off Bruce Springsteen's album Born in the USA. I'm sorry about that. We have a new album here we're talking about for you. It is Lee Sadie's, the newest album, Darker Circles. Came out, I believe, in the early summer. Is a definitely continuation in the same vein as their other alt country releases. If you haven't heard of them, they're a Toronto band, and actually live one of the pair of brothers who are the main guitar players and singer lives in downtown. The other one out on a farm just outside of Toronto. But yeah, one of the brothers lives just over north of college, right by Dovercourt there, so on the west end, on Northumberland, I believe, and this is one of their title tracks off one of their albums. But yeah, the latest album is called Darker Circles, and in fitting with the title, it certainly is one of their more darker, I guess you could say, or more morbid albums. It's slower, I guess you'd say, but still in that same alt country vein. The Good Brothers, which are the lead singer-songwriters of the band, have done a really good job. They've worked with Jayhawks, Gary Lawrence, I believe. If you look at the cover of the album, actually, in fact, you like, might mistake it for some sort of album from the 80s. But it's definitely a moodier album. But it still continues with their haunting, I guess you'd say, haunting guitar lines and somber tone. It was recorded in Toronto. They said in recording it, they tried to go for a more psychedelic feel. So more Dark Side of the Moon-ish than the album Nuggets. And it's pretty... some of those Floyd influences are definitely evident on songs like Cut Corners. And in the final song, 10 More Songs. But yeah, we're going to go to a track here from the album. It's a instrumental track, and it's titled 10 More Songs. So here you are. Sorry about that. We had a fade out early there. We have Emma out on the street right now with an interview. And just queuing that up there for you. So hold on for a second. And we'll bring you Emma's interview. Emma, are you there?
Right. Sorry. Hi.
Hey. All right. Yeah, you are on air.
Awesome. So we've got Ramsey DeSilva out here with me. He's a grad of Ryerson.
Mm-hmm.
Ramsey, how important is maintaining your Facebook profile to you?
That's for me, it's, I would say, equally important as I maintain my offline profile, because I know people are always snooping on whatever you do, either it's offline or online. So I take the same care, I think, to know that everything that about me that's online is probably safe. I Google my name and I Facebook myself and I Facebook other people, so I do the same. I would know how much access they have to my identity, so I guess I do all that it takes to keep it safe.
Has information on Google or Facebook, has that ever led to any interactions with your employer?
In the past, always, actually, if I have an interview at a job, I would Google my interviewer's name, I would Facebook them, I'd find stuff about them. So I think it goes both ways, in the fact that while they are snooping on us, we can do the same to them and snoop on them and find out stuff about them. So it helps everybody, really, to understand more about people you're going to interact with before meeting them. So that's my take on that.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Hey. Okay.
All right, that was Emma there, out on the street, grabbing an interview. Continuing on with the topic of your online footprint. Coming close to the close of the show here, but if you do have any comments or any questions, definitely call in at 416-595-1655. We are going to continue on with the rest of the Sadie song, 10 more songs, and we'll be with you shortly. Yeah, definitely don't hesitate to pick up the new Sadie's album. And they play in Toronto fairly often, so if you see any concert posters or any concerts coming up, definitely check them out.
Definitely. So we're going to leave you for this morning. Once again, if you have any questions or, you know, you want to call in, definitely keep our number in hand for next week. It's a 416-595-1655. And I'm Emma.
And this is Mike.
And this has been Headlines and Deadlines on 88.1 CKLN FM.
Have a great day.
Yeah.